on today's episode of Project Pundits Unplugged. Jim finally embraces Agile.
I'm going to admit this to the world. We are using an Agile method to develop our product.
Listen to the dulcet tones of your hosts.
I wish you a good night. I'm assuming that you're listening to this podcast for the sole purpose of being able to dulcetly put yourself to sleep. In which case, the three of you that have actually come to the end of this podcast, I not only applaud, but wish you sweet dreams and a pleasant evening. I think that's good for me, Jim. That's all I've got there.
Braden and Jim test out their ASMR skills.
KBBL, K-Babble. All talk, all the time. Sibilant voices.
All project management talk. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Project Pundits podcast. We're going to dive into a few different topics today. I think Braden and my's opinions on these topics are very important to people and are influential in how they perceive the world. So I do not want to rob people of that. If, you know, we can spend a few minutes of our time doing that. So.
Rob them. You would not want to rob them.
I do not want to.
Wisdom. Casting your pearls. So,
We'll do some current event stuff. I have some professional update stuff to share, and then the topic of today's episode is consulting, which I cannot explain to you how excited Braden is about this. He could not wait for this. And Braden doesn't believe in taking pills, but I believe he drank a Monster Energy before this just so he could survive the episode.
It was two of them. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. The reason I wanted to cover some of the stuff in consulting, one, my take on consulting, one, there's some fundamental disconnects about what people think about, like, what consulting is. And because of some of that, it's gotten some negative perception.
See, what it is Jim wants to just have a video record of his tirade so that when someone differs with him on what they think a consultant is or should be or should do, he doesn't have to waste his time. He just says, here, I'll send you a link, and then walks on. That's what, and I'm here to help him record that, basically.
That
I'm just
a
pretty face.
That is not fully
that
accurate.
That is so spot on.
It is not. I believe in altruistic actions, and this is an altruistic action where there is a lot of money wasted on consulting by organizations who do not know how to effectively leverage consulting and how they should leverage it. And through this, I expect that we'll help lower the cost of healthcare in the U.S. by talking about this in this episode.
This is a PSA from Jim, whose intent is both to lower the cost of healthcare and reduce inflation.
Right.
This is Jim's inflation
reduction. Why are you gonna bring that? So before we started on this, Braden called me stupid.
No, I didn't.
And
that
Braden,
is a lie.
Braden,
oh, my goodness. I did not
Braden,
call you stupid.
We were talking about inflation again, and I was describing – I don't even get into it again. I'm so tired of talking about it. In the end, Braden's right. I'm wrong. I mean, you
That's
know, like
not
any
true.
Good marriage, like – the discussion was about we're in violent agreement that the macro actions – by the government have contributed significantly to our inflammatory environment, both as it regards to money and in Braden and I's relationship.
Did we talk about this last night?
We did.
I like that. That was good. We talked about how all you need to do as a member of Congress is just pick whatever problem is facing the country, name the title of your bill, what's the solution to that problem, and then throw whatever the heck you want into that bill, because the bill doesn't actually have to do anything that the title says it does. That was essentially what happened with the Inflation Reduction Act, which...
Inflation Reduction Act, right?
Which is a spending
just
bill.
Just terribly, epically terribly named. And there's still, like, so much through that act and through the Transportation Act. There is, I don't even know what the number is. It's probably out there in some CBO report or something. But there's, I would guess there's probably $1 trillion of capital, like, available. For... which they have
that is
set
available
up the programs to distribute
to help
it.
Jim, it's available to help slow down the economy by not injecting trillions of dollars.
I believe was that by injecting the capital into transportation improvements,
you
increase the number of jobs available.
Yes,
and improve. So you're improving
I'm
the infrastructure.
This.
So
therefore, inflation goes down.
Right. You're going to drive down the cost of goods because it's going to be more effective for them to be transported on rail or the highways. Yeah, because there'll be less
it's
potholes.
It's so entertaining to see people who don't. They don't want to admit that the really basic principles, Keynes and other folks, you know, it's just like, no, that's too simple. It's more complex than that. Yeah, not so much.
So I don't want to talk about that anymore.
Okay, all right, we're not talking about it.
I already feel stupid.
Controversy.
So there you go, people. That was our bickering for the episode. So there was some really interesting current events, and Brayden insists that we got to keep our even though people have expressed that they love hearing us talk for as much time as we can take. I have the metrics to show that. I haven't shared them with Brayden yet, but
I'm sure that they're revealing, Jim. Very revealing.
We have tens upon tens of fans. Let's talk about a couple of current events, and then good news for everybody is I'm going to have some additional mental and professional cycles that I'm going to put some of that towards the podcast.
And you'll be all happy if he gives mental cycles to the podcast, incidentally.
That's it. More, right? More consulting talk, more project management. No. So, Bryn, did you see... I'm gonna start with this one. Did you see the latest FTC final rule on non-competes?
No.
So I didn't realize January. Yeah, just yesterday.
Is this so that I understand?
Yeah.
FTC is publishing guidelines around what's enforceable between two parties in a non-compete agreement. Is that what it is?
For the to be very specific, since I read it more today, for the industries they actually have control over. So they don't have control over all the industries, but it's a lot. It's most of the major ones. So.
FTC regulated corporations and companies. Okay.
Which I was surprised at how many they actually regulate, because at first I'm thinking, why is the FTC like putting out a rule about non-competes? And there you go with agencies. It's
I know.
Unique.
You never know. So could have been ATC, right? Could have been firearms, tobacco. You never know. Like
that's right. It's like But it turns out they want to get rid of non-competes, and their argument is, you know, it's a negative for workers. It drives wages down. It's anti-competitive.
It definitely is anti-competitive, and the government, FTC in particular, is always interested in increasing competition. I could see easily them not liking non-competes. What did they say? What did they change or say was or wasn't?
Basically, they got rid. They said they're not. Their arguments were that when they left it to the states are too inconsistent with how they apply the rules, and they're unfair. And that they want to get rid of them generally, and they got into not only going from company to company, leaving to start a business, a competitive business. They don't like. There's exceptions to this for executives who have a significant role in the planning of it. Basically,
proprietary strategy. Like, I get it. Where you'd have to say it gives you an unfair. Then it plays the other way. It gives you an unfair competitive advantage in starting a competing business that might go ahead and sweep up. Yeah, I get that.
But other than that, I mean, we'll put a link in there. I read a couple of different ones. And but it's really unique. So
I think that was always, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I always felt like non-competes originally, the intent of them was at a strategic level, maybe also some of the sales folks as well, trying to essentially prevent people or create an agreement between people to say, hey, if you leave, you're not going to take the stuff that is proprietary to our organization and use it to hurt us in some way or to,
you know, because exposed to. But what's ironic about that is that is enforceable through other mechanisms and statutes. So.
But I think it was intended initially at a higher level, at executive leadership, maybe operational leadership, and maybe
sales. Well, it got into specialty with tech, right? With tech. So, and it got really heavy with
trade secrets. You're getting people down to the right, and I get trade secret, but trade secrets are typically covered by NDAs,
that are covered
anyway. Well, no, trade secrets aren't so they're the opposite of patents. Patents, you have to say, here's how we do it. Trade secrets are where you say, we're going to do this by not essentially not telling anyone. In fact, side note: the original BIOS chip that was in some of the first PCs. The way that they protected the intellectual property that was used in the creation of that BIOS chip was by trade secret, which is why when they cloned them, when you remember the first PC, like 286, 386 clones came out, they did that by reverse engineering. And for a trade secret, that's allowed because they didn't patent it. They didn't publish. They essentially said, hey, we think we've got something that's so unique here.
It wasn't espionage. It was reverse engineering.
It was reverse engineering. They essentially spent time to figure out what are the inputs and outputs of this chip and reverse engineered the functionality. The chip wasn't perfect. If you remember, some of the early clones had issues here and there. But end of it was that trade secret was the approach that they took, and it failed not because they had espionage, but because they were able to reverse engineer it. If they had patented it, they would have still had protection, but it wouldn't have been as long. It would have been only for, I forget what patents are. Is it 7 years? Oh, maybe it's 18.
There's seven for some time. Maybe I think copyright.
It's been way too long since I've learned that stuff. I've done patents. But anyhow, sorry, I digress. Go ahead.
No. So now in severance packages, also, even if you're paying people, that you can't add similar types of, they're not enforceable. There's terms in there that are not enforceable. I'm actually in agreement with this because I've been probably more hit. And like, you can't steal things, certain things. Sure, to your point, like if it's a trade secret, someone can make the argument they've, you know, figured out how to do that. I mean, but I think those protections are there. And if someone wants to leave to go somewhere else to do something, like I don't, go. I mean, I'm not like forcing someone to stay or telling them they can't work. Like, I'm not too worried about the one that I was under. And again, I'll talk about that in a little bit, but like it's pretty onerous and it's, you know, I signed it. So I would never break an agreement unless there was some reason that it's not enforceable, but like I signed the agreement. I'm always one. If you sign a contract, you live up to it unless, you know, the other side didn't.
My only comment was just going to be where originally it was done for CEOs for higher level. Mm. Today, it seems like
everybody,
administrative assistants, you name it. They're doing non-competes. And you're like, that was not the intent of this, and I'm sure the FTC says it's having a negative impact not just on competition generally, but on the free movement of workers from, you know, one company to another.
And depending on what state you're in, right? There's these I shouldn't say everybody's, but there's the quote unquote right to work states where liberal, conservative, they don't enforce that.
Right to work commerce tends to be is against this.
But the Chamber of Commerce is against it. So there's going to be some briefs. So the other couple things. So it is the final rule that went out there that it still goes through a period. But I didn't realize the original proposed rule was in January. So it just finished. They got feedback, but they didn't substantively change the original language even after the feedback. And now, of course, there'll be some lawsuits and some other stuff, right? Because, you know, organizations like the Chamber of Commerce, who are, you know, they're representing businesses who don't like this. But anyways, I thought that was interesting.
For most companies, for the large ones, they don't necessarily, I don't think they're opposed to this even. They just want a level playing field, I think. So as long as it's enforced equally across all companies, that lets them steal as well as be stolen from, you know, potentially more. But as long as it's a level playing field, most large companies aren't going to
so.
Be.
I mean, there's been big arguments between people leaving between OpenAI, Microsoft, Google, Apple, like those high level people. But then again, if they were part of the strategic planning, then those are enforceable. Again, they're not saying they're not enforceable. Like if you were leading a division that set the direction X, Y, and Z, and you signed this, that was interesting. We'll put a link in there. Again, 120 days, you know, as long as there's no lawsuits that push that out or anything. The other thing was the spending bill to send gazillions of dollars to Israel, the Ukraine, and also apparently Taiwan. Look, we have a huge interest in Taiwan remaining independent until we can get chip manufacturing back on shore. But, so there's a ton of money in there. And then in that bill, they also put in the TikTok ban.
So.
So they did pass that. Biden, I don't know if he signed it or is going to sign it. I don't timing wise with this episode.
Where does Jim stand on the TikTok? I mean, if it were me, I would ban TikTok just because I hate that everything. I mean, on a regular basis, I just get drivel sent from, you know, any one of my children that shows me. I'm like, wow, you spend your time looking at that's amazing. But I recognize I may be in, I'm obviously in the minority given the number of Americans that use.
Where do I fall?
Yeah, where does Jim fall?
So there's a lot of nuance.
I joke about, you know, saying I would ban it outright, but honestly, as a very free capitalist, I would shudder at the thought that a government would ban I get it, it's not necessarily, it's half private industry, half government industry, but still, I'm way more about letting the free market operate. I don't know. What does Jim think about this?
I'm with you on that. I'm a free market person. Are those algorithms ultimately potentially destructive to society as a whole? The argument, the data probably says yes, but again, I mean, they're not the only ones with those kind of algorithms, right? So there are a lot of people who make a living off of that platform. Now, when I say a lot, it's thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, right? So people make some sort of money. Some of it's side gigs. Some people make their primary income off of it. So getting rid of that is tough. The psychological profiling the company is able to do based upon your watch history.
Real quick, so what was the rationale for the ban? What did
That's what I'm getting to.
Yeah, give it to me.
So they have a, just like any, and again, I worked for Lycos back in the day. I remember distinctly the conversations when we started to build essentially a psych profile of people, as you know, when you cookie, this is back in 99 and into 2000, 2001, when you cookie people, put a browser cookie.
In English, in England, that would be you biscuit people.
So, yeah, you
biscuit. Okay. Sorry, go ahead, Jim. I'm helping our European friends understand.
That's when all the evil started with tracking everything you do online, right?
Sure.
But we built these profiles, and then you were able to fine-tune the ads you served them, which were more effective, and then you were able to drive them to different products, which got them to be more sticky, which on the site, which got more ads to be displayed, right? And so I remember
and if
when
you
that
did
all
a
started.
Cross-script attack, then you could steal other people's cookies and you could read all of their other information that you had there too, which would be really cool.
Which, and then once we consolidated down to like two advertising providers, that just happened anyway. So like service providers, right? Where everybody used them, then it was Google AdWords.
Look it up.
And all that.
Yep.
And now that's for sale. And, you know, places like the CIA and others are acquirers of that data as well, right? So anyways, with TikTok and Facebook and others, they have a really in-depth AI-driven or it's AI. They have algorithms that self-improve and are get really good at knowing what you want to see and everything else and all of that. So from that perspective, I really believe you can steer opinions and influence how people think through that. You can. Now, you know, if you're doing it through an algorithm, it's self-serving to where it's just trying to make the most money. But the argument is since every business in China is essentially tied to the Communist Party, like they are legally, like they have to legally, I don't know what the proper term is. They don't own it, but it's.
It goes back to the quasi-governmental corporations. Right. I understand. That's the challenge there.
And so theoretically, right, it's a national security risk. If the government tries to weigh in and you start to steer, like, you know, opinions or anything to cause disruptions, it can be done, right? I don't know if it's happening. Their argument it can't. Their argument is that they're segmenting the U.S. into separate data centers. The government doesn't have access, although if you watch the congressional testimony of the CEO of TikTok, it's squishy. But
pause right there, because this is a really important question. Does anyone believe for a second that the Chinese government does not have access to all of the data that's TikTok collects? I'm going to just say for the record here, there's not a way in the world that I don't believe that it, and we post stuff to TikTok. So right now, there's some algorithm that culls, you know, the data from even this posting, transcripts it, translates it, looks for keywords, and then they decide something to do with it. I don't believe for a second that the government does not have full access to every piece of data. Do you have a different opinion on that, Jim?
No. I'm sure they do. The thing is, you can't assume otherwise. You'd be stupid, right? So you have to. And so the other thing is, what's interesting, and I deleted TikTok off my phone. We do post. I will tell you.
Wait, why did you delete TikTok off your phone?
So it turns out, if you read their terms of service,
yeah,
they have the broadest collection of keystroke collection, audio collection, like.
They're taking like everything off absurd of your phone that they want to.
Right, basically, right? And there's something about not even having the app open, even if your app is closed. And
I've got to look and see if I have I think I have TikTok on my phone. You're scaring me, Jim.
We'll post an article. I took a note. I'll post an article about what it is, you know, people who, some, like, because you can't read those terms of services. They're like 87 pages long.
Now I'm really worried.
When I watched a podcast and then I read an article that I'm like, oh, well, that's horrifying. You know, and then I don't want to get into it. Like, we're talking a lot about current events and stuff. And again, this is supposed to be about the really exciting topic of consulting. But the other thing is you cannot convince me that either the phone or the Amazon Echoes or whatever, that there is something when I do not have an app open that is listening, because I will be talking about the most obscure topic possible with a friend, and I will go back on to let's just call it Facebook or Instagram or something. You get
a cross script ad. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, no. That's because you probably searched. I'm like, no, I don't ski. And like, you know, I'm trying to think of something stupid from, like, you know, something so obscure. There is no possible way.
And well, I'm not Alexa, saying it's, if you do have an Alexa, then and the part of their agreement is that they do listen, and you agree to let them give you ads based on the listening. Although I don't mind that. I would way rather have.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. As long as, you know, I think it's above board and you know it's happening.
Yeah.
Right. And the argument is, like, there's limited privacy anyways. And, you know, ultimately, like, you're going to get ads. You might as well get ads that are relevant.
Don't you feel that way? I love, honestly, like, the trend, I way prefer. So think about growing up, right? And 3/4 of what I watch, if I'm watching cartoons and I'm watching, you know, like Get Back Into Life with Depends and, like, you know, like whatever the commercials are for stuff that I don't care about at all, I love these days when I get to your point, you're like, oh, here comes a Facebook ad and it's for, you know, whatever drone stuff. Or I love it. I'm like, yes, give me ads for stuff I like. That makes time go so much faster. It makes the stuff that I'm looking interesting. Does it mean that I'm maybe going to buy some more stuff that I shouldn't have? Hey, okay.
A road diverges in the desert. Lexus. The road you're on, John Anderton, is the one less traveled.
Make sure you follow the dice. Good evening. As long as it's transparent. Like, we should always be transparent. Like, and right now, I don't feel like a lot of this.
The agreements are very shady, and they're not
it's
clear
like
to
signing
say.
Mortgage agreements, right? Remember, there's that law that was passed. You got to make mortgages easier, agreements easier to understand, because they're like just gobbledygook. Legal agreements are all
mortgages are pretty easy to understand, but this stuff to your point, right? You get the privacy freaks that get really excited about things, but I don't think it's bad to say here's the data. What we're going to do is we're going to listen through this device, and as we pick up on conversations and identify keywords, we may broadcast ads to you that are relevant to those keywords. I think it would be okay to say we're going to do that, and to say at the same time, here's what we're not going to do. We are not for any, you know, purpose. If you're doing illegal activity, we're not going to forward these logs to law enforcement for possible incrimination. We're not gonna, you know, blah, blah, blah. Something to help privacy folks feel. Will they forward those to law enforcement?
Separate issue. So that's the argument, is that data, that's again what the CIA buys, is that aggregate data.
Interesting.
It's kind of this broad, they share it back to the network, and it's part of the broader profile because they pay for access to the broader network where, like, so if you're on Facebook, there's something they've learned about you that, you know, will go into the network, and then it's pulled in by Google. And so they have this complete profile of you that's there. So there's that kind of sharing back, right? If it was isolated to just to what you're saying, I think that's there. But again, as long as you're being transparent with that. And then also, I frankly would just like the option of, if I don't want that, that the company say, giving you this service isn't free. Like, we don't, like, it costs us something, and it costs us $5 a month in order to give this to you. So you either cover that by ads or you pay. I pay for the YouTube subscription and no ads. And you can do there's other features and functions that I like that you get with it. But yeah, I made that choice. You know, am I on Facebook enough to care about that? Probably not, but maybe I would if the price is right. I don't know. But anyways, we don't have that choice right now. And it's a little scary. So do I believe in a TikTok ban? Yes. And the whole thing is, I forget how long they have until December or something to sell the company and segment it, right? Like, the problem is the economics are here. So it's going to be a really interesting battle. They're going to sue in court. I think the government's going to come out ahead on this one. And then ByteDance, who owns TikTok, is going to have to make a decision. I mean, like, I don't think they're going to want to lose probably what amounts to probably more than half their revenue in the U.S. is my guess.
Well, and if you think about it, they will, knowing what they're going to forfeit without making those changes, they'll change, at least in the U.S., they'll change what they have to in order to maintain that user.
So they got to divest. They're saying they have to divest. There can be no Chinese ownership.
Right.
So
all China does is then they say, oh, sure, no problem. They sell it to some German conglomerate who then sends the profits back home or something. They can find ways around this.
Money is that, but it's that access to the data. So the US wants auditability on, you know, protection.
All I'm saying is China would be happy to say, oh, I'll let US teens fund our nuclear program. No problem here.
Yeah. Yeah. So those were some of the current events. And then, you know, I don't know where I fall on, again, this continued foreign funding of aid. And, you know, I fall somewhere in the middle on it. I think some of it's necessary. Some of it's.
Well, I was going to say, so we're at 30 minutes here. Or so do we want to talk about consulting?
Yes, Braden. Look, there's several conversations about consulting. This was this is the first initial one.
Into your series of tirades. All right, well, let's start.
We've gotten, we did some episodes a lot about project management and everything else. I mean, consulting is just another, one of those things.
I'm totally on board with this.
It's not as interesting to Braden.
Jim, I love this stuff.
Oh, my Lord. So it's funny coming from Braden, who consulting is such a big part of, what he's either a consultant or he is a consultant, and then he's been involved with this for the last 20 years in one fashion or another. So, had to deal with it in budgeting cycles, had to deal with the consultants themselves, had to deal with good, had to deal with bad.
Absolutely.
But, apparently he likes to just leave it at the office and not talk about it. Well, and try to make it better.
No, I just don't need to record my tirades by video so that I can refer people
it's
to
it's not a tirade.
No, my goodness. Did I say tirade? Jim, that's not what I meant.
So, I gotta just say, speaking of consulting, so I am no longer with the firm that I was with, for almost 3.5-4 years. The details around, why I left primarily is, needing to pursue a little bit something different. So my roots weren't in consulting. I think for people like Braden and I and others who like solving problems and like to continually be challenged, consulting offers that. And, the better you are with that, there's also a lot of money you can make in that world. You get a lot of different problems to solve. You meet a lot of people. The money's generally good, but it can be stressful and whatnot. So I've decided to make a change. So I wanted to put that out there. But, I think there's, upon leaving, it was clear to me that there is a lot of misinformation and misconceptions about consulting. And I thought it was important to clarify some of these things up. Braden.
Let's clear them up. I think it's a great idea. I don't object to people being aware of the consulting world and how to use them effectively, what a consultant can do for you, what a consultant shouldn't be used for, because I've seen a good amount, I would say never from folks that I managed or we managed. But I've seen so many consultants just be either underused or used so poorly, like having highly paid consultants do administrative work. And of course, one of the universal things that every consultant will tell you is a consultant will always say yes, right? Why wouldn't you as a consultant? I mean, there are small exceptions, but generally, if you want to pay me $300 an hour to fill out a spreadsheet of very tactical, low value added, status reporting or something, I'm your man. Absolutely, I will do that. And I will happily do that for as long as you want me to, because you're paying me $300 an hour to do it.
but we should talk about what is consulting, because I think there's a few things that get blended. And you can look up what consulting is. You've heard of some of the national consulting firms like Accenture or PricewaterhouseCoopers or Deloitte & Touche, or they're just Deloitte now. And then there's some, Ernst & Young and then there's BCG, the Boston Consulting Group. And then there's, and then you get down to boutique ones, which are smaller and whatnot,
but essentially Booz Allen's another big one, probably, because they're
and Strategy. I never know how to say it. It's either Strategy ampersand, which I always found the renaming of that division. I don't know how you say it. I never figured out whether it was Strategy and
or just the ampersand. Yeah, I'm with you. No, yeah, I got you.
There's more pure strategy consulting, help solve a problem. Give us the answer to what that problem is, right? And those are the McKinsey's of the world. All of them will do that, right? A lot of them are strategy consultants. Help us solve complex problems, enter a new market, pick your big problem. They generally don't stick around to help you then implement that strategy. And a lot of times they do have the smartest people, whether in a domain or just generally. They are very smart people who work for these organizations and whatnot. It's expensive. So that's kind of
big organizations, right? The big ones tend to have the brightest minds. That's true. They attract that, yeah.
Yep. And then you have, and again, there's some blend on this, and when I've looked this up before, there's not a ton of consistency. But then the second category is I call it management consulting, which is it's same type of thing. So you do strategy work, but there's more of organizational consulting, modeling. How do I get work done? It's still still mostly in a strategy realm, but they'll build plans, they'll do different things. That's a lot of what I do.
They'll help you,
management level consulting.
They'll help you assess an organization and actually put people in roles or recommend people for roles and things like that. Sure, it's the next step down.
And then there's just with consulting in general, I would say there's specialties, right? So what's interesting about consulting is that the people who do it and do it well have a set of skills that aren't necessarily domain specific, meaning they're not just in it because they're healthcare specialists or oil and gas industry or telecommunications. There are people who do specialize, don't get me wrong, but consultants generally have a set of skills that allow them to do well with problem solving, communications, influencing, and that data analysis, a whole bunch of soft skills they do have. They will likely have some set of domain expertise, but they understand technology, how to apply technology, business models in a broad sense, right? And all of that. And when I talk about that kind of consulting, that's what I'm talking about. But there is another set of consultants who are essentially reached the peak of their industry and they have domain expertise that is untouchable, because they've gone through and worked for all the top companies in an industry. They came out of, what you call it, coming out of industry. And they, they have a bunch of awareness, knowledge, expertise, and many times they reach a level of wisdom about how the industry works, and they can go into another organization who's in that industry and help them figure out how to succeed, how to beat their competitors, how to launch a new product, whatever it is, right? So that's another group of specialized consultants. What my whole point on this is that so I came up not top down. So I didn't go to Harvard, I didn't go to Yale. I went to a good school. I went to Bentley. I did not finish Bentley, but I went to Bentley's a good school, and then Bentley's very much an applied business, I would say, so knowledge and but just very practical. But when I got into consulting, I did it through the other route, which is not consulting. And this is a big point here. It's contracting, right? So it's basically organizations have some sort of a capacity missing within their organization, and they hire someone on a temporary basis to fill that. At its very basic level, that's staff augmentation.
And lots of people will mix those terms and call people who we might maybe more appropriately call staff augmentation or contractors. They will also call them consultants, including themselves. They will refer to themselves as consultants as opposed to contractors.
And this is the point I want to get to a lot of this, because then you start, when you blur those lines, it gets really hard both as an individual, trying to figure out if you want to do this and you're a contractor or a consultant and all that, and then organizations figuring out what they're buying. So, this was essentially what I wanted to cover here, and not much more beyond this, but essentially contractors. The way I've distilled this down to when you sell this, so I've sold consulting and I've sold staff augmentation, contracting. I distinguish it. I called consultants, but staff augmentation, I called them specialists, right? And again, you within your specialty function, like you could be a phenomenal project manager, right? I believe there are job grades at each of those functional specialties to where you're kind of your lowest level, associate level, learning, whether you're a project manager, you're an analyst, you're a software engineer, whatever else. And then there's a whole progressive track you should be able to go through in your career where you're an associate, you're a senior associate, you're a full contributor, you're a regular PM, and then you're a senior PM, then you're a manager of PMs, then you're a director, and there's a principal, like there's a whole path of the specialist. But what I find to be 100% different between specialists, which are very valuable, and the salaries and bill rates and everything can go up through that, you know, they can be at the very highest level, they can be on par with consulting rates.
Especially if it's a specialist that has a rare skill set, right?
Especially, or they have domain expertise and they're a PM in that specialty.
Sure. Right? Yep.
They need to be able to wear any hat, almost any hat. I shouldn't say any hat. I mean, I didn't necessarily expect them to code, but to write computer code, but they should be able to do data analysis. They should be able to do business analysis. They should be able to do some level of technology, conceptual designs, problem solving. They should be able to do project management. You know, it's whatever is needed within an organization in order to help them solve their problem. And then in my mind,
or to be able to marshal the appropriate resources. So let's say that I have 3/4 of those skill sets, but boy, I am just not the best technical design lead, and I'm going to fail when it comes to understanding how this application or this series of platforms can be applied. I would be able to recognize and say, okay, I don't have that skill set, but I know who does. I can bring them on my team and I'll have them here tonight to be able to help fill in my gap.
That's right.
Because they don't necessarily have to have all of the, although they should develop them at some point, but they can still perform well as long as they can either do it themselves or marshal additional resources to help fill in their gaps.
And Braden and I, when we talked, if you go back to our earlier episode, some of this is going to sound like a little bit contradictory, but as a consultant, the other skills, really, they need to be excellent communicators. I think any role needs to be great communicators, and that's especially project managers and analysts, right? You have to be great communicators. But I think communication, to the nth degree, your ability to influence as a consultant is huge, right? So in your ability to communicate, we talked about this in those other episodes, but your ability to communicate with different levels of people is absolutely critical. Whether it's you billing direct or the company you're working with is billing you out at, like Braden said, consulting rates, you know, generally $200-$400 up to $800-$900 an hour, depending on, you know, what in particular your skill is and what you're doing. You better have those skills. So you better be able to have tough conversations, be able to influence people that your answer is the right one. You know, I don't want to go into too much more here, but I just wanted to set the groundwork for some of this. I think organizations, especially large organizations, tend to use consulting firms for a couple of purposes. One, they truly do need external expertise, right? Organizations, if left there to their own, let's just talk about public companies. If left to their own need, generally optimize their functions to perform them as optimally as possible. So they're not really built to be innovative. There's a few organizations who are innovative by nature, but generally speaking, you optimize your operations and everything else. You hire people who are good at that and everything else. And those aren't usually the same people who are change agents and will, you know, figure out how you need to change within your industry. You usually hire consultants for that. And executives in particular, even if they know how to change or know how to want to drive their organizations, I have not met a single executive in my career. I know of some, I haven't met them, who are willing to stick their neck out themselves and put it online to do what they know to be done. So a lot of large organizations will retain consultants, one, because they need the expertise, or two, because it's 100% defensible to your board of directors if you hire an external consulting firm and they tell you to do something. If something goes wrong with that, it was their fault.
And and Jim, one of the most common things that you see too with consultants, one of the most common reasons I think that companies hire them, is consultants are also working with all of your competitors, and consultants are going to know, we're talking about innovation, but one of the things that consultants also can help you do is not innovate, right? They can say, here's what everyone else is doing that you're not doing. They genericize it, right? Because typically they're signing NDAs, but they can anonymize and say, look, 3/4 of your competitors are using this product in this way, or they use this type of process to solve this thing that you're trying to solve. And as a result, not only is it defensible in terms of, hey, this is, you know, an expert that's sharing it, but the industry is, you know, 3/4 of here's data that they can share, that the industry, this is becoming an industry standard, therefore we want to bring ourselves up to that standard or par, whatever it is. So I think both helping you have another voice to defend your decision, but also to say, here's what other people are doing, and give you that broader perspective. Oh, yeah. That's one of the most common things that I see.
Or they can bring in ancillary things you weren't even thinking about. Like, oh, there's discussions at this government agency about a new regulatory change that is going to completely, shift blah, 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 right? So those organizations will draw upon, to Braden's point, a ton of other ancillary research. So there can be some value in there for sure. I think there's, as I had mentioned before, consulting firms are very, in not all cases, but they should be theoretically some of the best people you can hire to give you an independent strategy on how to do something that you want to do, whether it's launch a new product, increase your profitability, whatever those things are. Your customers are all PO'd, they'll help you figure out what that plan is. What organizations are terrible with is then taking that plan and figuring out how to actually execute that. So the term in the industry that's been around forever, strategy to execution, right? So the large firms aren't built to cost effectively manage the execution approach. Some organizations will pay them to do it. To Braden's point, you're paying $250 an hour for an associate to fill out a spreadsheet to track like tasks and things.
Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
But they're not built to do that. So I think there's a big industry gap still. I still see it. And this is why a lot of organizations hate consultants. And I don't think it's necessarily their fault. It's just that the businesses hired them in and either the consultants didn't advise them about how to transition to execution or told them where their gaps are if they were to execute this strategy. The businesses just didn't plan to do that. And then all of a sudden they spent $2 million on a strategy that, like people say, just sits on a shelf. It's pretty and everything else. That continues to be a huge problem. That is what I want is when I do consulting, I try to bridge that gap in I think the right model, for big strategies and everything else, the nationals do that, but really the right models for organizations are to build a strategy that is executable and then leverage external help to either transition or to manage cost effectively the execution of that strategy. That's the only way you're going to get that ROI.
There are a fair amount of execs, I'll say, who hire consultants to come and tell them that their idea is right. They already have a plan. They have an execution and they just say, hey, can you, and to be fair, there are probably plenty of times where they have the idea is sound. It's a smart approach. And they just say, I need some additional data or background information for you to be able to help me convince the board or whoever it is that my idea is right. But that happens a fair amount where they're not even looking for help with strategy or execution. They just want someone to come and say, show me that I'm doing the right thing, and then I'm going to go and execute it. So sometimes they're not looking for it, but most of the time, to your point, it's the most common thing that happens, sure, is that the strategy then has nowhere to go, either because they're not prepared for that transition, or you almost need... if not resources, right, to be able to execute, at least resources to manage the transition.
That's right.
To execution, right?
Yeah, now I'll just throw this last point out. And then, again, there's some of these things which, Braden didn't do too much eye rolling on this one. But you know, diving into some of these things. But
I think Jim was giving me permission. Go ahead.
The thing that organizations also forget is that you can't just hire these people, give them the keys to the castle, and, you know, say, I'll see you in 3 months. You have to manage your consultants, which is ironic because it's hard to, you almost have to hire another consultant to manage your consultants. And that sounds weird, but like, you need to make sure that what you're getting is effective. And then that other consultant should also help you keep an eye towards the fact that you have to execute whatever it is they're telling you, right? And they will help you with that transition. That is another big gap.
Pitting consultant groups against each other, especially since they both want, if you think about it, they're both interested in a larger piece of the pie. Both of them are, right? And so if you have one to say, hey, I want you to develop the strategy and then help me figure out execution, and then you hire another to say, work with them, and, you know, and then it... That typically is, hey, we're both trying to undermine, but, you know, there's a level of professionalism, but they're both interested in ultimately getting more business through helping to manage transition, execution, et cetera. So it's good to have that check and balance, I think. It's a smart approach.
Yeah, and look, executives, like, I've known the gamut of them. Like, most of them don't want to get into the weeds of the day-to-day. If you don't want to, that's fine. Just make sure you have somebody trusted that you trust, whether it's a chief of staff or someone full time, or like you said, another consultant to help you manage that. Otherwise, it's a crapshoot. And for the most part, it's a volume. They need to sell volume. They need to sell people and everything else. So their incentive models aren't aligned to yours. So anyway, so I wanted to put that out there. I think there's a lot about consulting that I do want to eventually talk about, but really I just want to kind of lay the groundwork, especially since there's a lot of opinions I have on that, and they're not just to put an opinion out or anything else. I think there, you know, part of what we're trying to do is talk about some of this stuff in a practical way. And the fact that for now, at least, I am pivoting away from consulting, which I've been doing for 25 straight years, pretty much. Yeah, 25 years. Prior to that, I was in the startup and the startup world. And that's where, you know, I think Breen and I, similar age, like kind of came into the professional world during the internet boom times. And those were the best times. I mean, at least from my perspective, it was just like money and innovation and cool stuff. And I think we're hitting another one of those with AI. You know, I want to take a lot of the experience that I've learned, not only from the startups back then, but through consulting, problem solving, how to actually get work done and apply it to a startup. It feels rough to me to transition out of consulting without at least leaving some level of my lessons learned to the world. But yeah, that was all I wanted to do with this one. So it wasn't that painful, Breen.
Yeah, except for it's one of 12. So yeah, the pain's only starting.
So I'll leave one other thing and then we can wrap this up. So as part of the startup stuff I'm working on, I'm going to admit this to the world. We are using an agile method to develop our product because it's actually the right method for the high amount of iteration that we need to do. I was convinced of this. And so for those of you who say that I can't change, I can change, and, you know, the right model for the right thing. So we'll talk about agile. I'm trying to get that, our time with our friend Breen set up so we can talk about that. Maybe that'll be our next one.
Well, Jim, I mean, if you're using agile, it sounds like you're the one who needs to
stand. I still think it's a scourge on the entire world. Like, that's cost the country and the world hundreds of billions of dollars.
In certain places, it's the right thing to do. It's just not always the right thing to do, which is apparently what
that's right.
The world thinks.
We're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Sure.
Right? It's just like, so that was it. So anything you want to add? We were well under the 90 minute timing that, We're trying to.
So for those of you who have somehow managed to stay awake, I wish you a good night. I'm assuming that you're listening to this podcast for the sole purpose of being able to dulcetly put yourself to sleep, in which case the three of you that have actually come to the end of this podcast, I not only applaud, but wish you sweet dreams and a pleasant evening. I think that's good for me, Jim. That's all I've got there.
We can talk in dulcet, quiet tones. We could. What's that called?
Welcome to that, KBBL, K-Babble. All talk, all the time. Sibilant voices.
All project management talk, all the time.
We've got, actually, I've got the like hardware for this. Like it can really pick up like the nuances of the voice, especially if you kind of lean in like that. Yeah, there is. What is the, my girls show me these things all the time. Asthma.
Yeah, it's like,
no, I always say it's asthma. Us talking quietly to which people. All right, we're way over. Close us out here, Jim.
All right, so thank you for watching this episode. Prove Braden wrong. Give us a like. Let's get as many likes on this so we can do more consulting videos.
Please
let us know if you like the
don't like
talk.
This video. If you respect us at all. Just even a dislike. Can you unsubscribe? Would you just for this episode, just for this one, unsubscribe to help?
No, no, no. We don't. I don't want to risk the reverse psychology kind of approach here. So please do like, subscribe. It does help out. And then we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks again, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.